Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 60. And the Steelers are, well, you know, about, what do we got, Dave? About 50 hours away, maybe 55 hours away from taking on the New England Patriots on, if you're in Western Pennsylvania or if you're in New England, probably the game of the year. And a game that was circled from the day the schedules came out, a Week 15 game between the two teams that played in last year's AFC Championship game. And both teams have done everything possible to build this game up to the point it is, Dave. They're both come in at 11-2. There's a decent chance the winner finishes the season at 14-2, and we'll have home field advantage throughout. So, you know, you couldn't ask for anything more from, you know, maybe you can in performance, but not really in record-wise for both teams to get here and make this game the game we all hoped it would be.
Episode 60. 60 might be the over-under number we should...
just take the over. Just take the over, whatever it is.
Maybe that should be the over and under for Sunday as well, too. This is a game that, you know, I think if you're a Steelers fan, you're hoping is much closer than... You know, obviously, you know, a few of the previous ones, and if you look back at last year, David, have you actually gone back and looked at the rosters from last year's AFC Championship game from both teams and kind of seen how each team has kind of changed? I put the whole list of players that are no longer on the Steelers that dressed for that game, and let me read off some of these names to you. Lawrence Timmons, no longer. He started that game. Ross Cockrell started that game as well too. If you remember. No Cam Hayward last year, right? In that
AFC. Missed the second half of the season.
Right. So LT Walton got the start in that game. If you look at offensively for the Steelers, David Johnson was one of the two tight ends that started that game. And starting opposite wide receiver Antonio Brown was a guy by the name of Kobe Hamilton. Sammy Coates also saw playing time in that game. Justin Gilbert.
Sammy Coates saw more play. I think he saw, 17 snaps or something like that. He played more in that game than we anticipate, having not played much up to that. You know, that was kind of that stretch he didn't play a lot.
Kobe Hamilton played 42 snaps in that game. Sammy Coates played 17 snaps in that game. Let me go through some more of these names. Remember that cat named Ricardo Matthews?
I was a fan. I was, you know, as I've said many times, I thought Ricardo was a very viable backup D lineman for the Steelers last year. He got a lot of playing time.
Who would you rather have now, though? Tyson Alualu or Ricardo Matthews?
Well, you know, I think Tyson Alualu did some good things early in the season. I have to say, we haven't really seen much of him over the second half of the season. It's not necessarily a knock on him, but he really hadn't been much of a. Again, it's more, you know, the guys have been healthy too. It's been in there. Hayward's been in there after the, you know, guys missed some time earlier in the year. So, you know, he hadn't really been much of a factor.
Right. He's played decent against the run.
He's played decent. He's played decent. I think that everybody. You know, I know some of the beat guys weren't all that high on Ricardo Matthews. I don't think the upgrade has been – I don't think it's been a noticeable upgrade, put it that way, although I think he has been fine. This is not a knock because I thought Matthews was fine as well.
All right. The Steelers' long snapper, of course, last year was Greg Warren. He's no longer there. Go through some of these names here. Remember that guy named Jarvis Jones?
Jarvis Jones. Hopefully we're not seeing a replay of Jarvis Jones's career.
So I think you get
the drift there, you know. And now, obviously, Ryan Shazier played in that game last year, and he won't this year. James Harrison started at right outside linebacker last year. I'll read you off some of these snap totals. Now, obviously, Le'Veon Bell started that game and made it through 11 snaps in total, and really probably six of those came after he knew something was wrong with that groin of his. But let's see here. Eli Rogers played 59 of 69 snaps in that game. D'Angelo Williams played 58 of 69. Kobe Hamilton, as I mentioned, played 42 of 69. As you mentioned, Sammy Coates, 17. Le'Veon Bell, 11. Darius Hayward-Bey had to play 10 snaps in that game. David Johnson,
yeah, people. I think people may not remember. You know, Le'Veon got dinged up. So
right from the get go there. On the defensive side of the ball, of course, Lawrence Timmons and Ross Cockrell played every snap in that game. Who else here? James Harrison played 57 of 74 snaps in that game, and William Gay played 42 of 74. LT Walton had to play almost half the game. Ricardo Matthews played 20 snaps. Jarvis Jones played 17. Even Daniel McCullers saw 9 snaps, and Jordan Dangerfield saw 8, while Robert Golden saw 4. So, I think I burned up 5 minutes here stating kind of the obvious here. This is a much different Steelers team than just last year in the playoffs in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, and people have talked about, rightly so, the fact that this will be the first time that, you know, you've had all four guys, depending on what your view is of Martavis Bryant, ready to go and healthy for hopefully an entire game. So we'll see what happens. There's for those who we had mentioned on Wednesday, Ben Vallin was going to join us. We had a communication problem about when he was traveling for Miami. So he's going to be with us for 30 minutes. We actually did the interview yesterday, and Ben was great, as he always has been when he's joined us. So we go into this thing in pretty good detail. And I really, honestly, we try to keep those interviews with beat writers to 15 or 20 minutes. And this one went 30, and I felt like we could have gone another 30. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up. Dave, for the Steelers, a discouraging, maybe the most discouraging in terms of surprise injury report that we've had all season coming out yesterday. It's some of these things, we guess on based on prior history, and, try not to pat ourselves on the back when we're right and not get too annoyed when we're wrong. But the Joe Hayden situation, again, limited yesterday. I've said all along that I thought Hayden would go, would have to practice a week before he would be good to go. So we'll see what comes today, but I don't expect him to go. Obviously, I think you can look at Vance McDonald as being out for this game. Two guys added to the injury report. I would expect Tyler Matakevich to be out in this game as well. And then two guys added to the injury report, really not good. I got to think that Pouncey is going to be there no matter what. But you know how I feel about hamstring injuries. They are minimum a week, and limited for Juju probably means that he was a go in practice until he got hurt. And then when he got hurt, he couldn't go anymore. So he was limited in terms of he didn't go the full practice. So I'm going to, guessing, we'll see. But I'm going to guess we're not going to see Juju's not going to practice today and not going to go in this game on Sunday. And that's going to be that's going to be a significant loss for the Steelers if that's the case.
Boy, you're Debbie Downer today.
Yeah, Debbie Downer Friday.
I'm more of the glass half full kind of guy, I think, when it comes to injuries. Juju was a surprise showing up on there, and did he just feel a little bit of a tweak there, or is it a carryover from that hamstring injury he had a few weeks ago that kept him out of the game? Was him being off a week not helpful? Did he not do the right things to keep his body, in the right condition? We don't know. I think we'll learn a little bit more on Friday. I'm gonna go opposite than you. I think until I hear a little bit, more definitive on this, I'm going to guess Juju goes. Obviously, Marquise Pouncey with the hip injury is going to go. I'll be shocked if he does not play. Joe Hayden and Tyler Matakevich both limited again on Thursday. Boy, they sure are still trying to paint it like Joe Hayden's might give it a go this week. So and to hear kind of the quotes from Keith Butler on Thursday, really, Friday is normally probably not the most strenuous practice of the week. It sounds like it might be this week. I think they called Wednesday like a hat day. In other words, a very kind of low-key practice. So maybe today's the day that they're going to strap it on a little bit tighter today. So even then, I would expect Hayden at best to be listed as questionable. And I would take that as a good sign if he's listed as questionable later today. Obviously, if he's listed as doubtful or anything other than that, then you can go ahead and rule him out right away there. Tyler Matakavich, I can't see him playing after being limited on the shoulder. And even if he does dress, do you really want Tyler Matakavich out on that field for 50% or more of the snaps against the Patriots? I don't think so. The two guys I think you can probably go ahead and rule out right now, Cody Sensabaugh and Vance McDonald, both with shoulder injuries. Boy, if you don't have Sensabaugh and you don't have Joe Hayden, then Cameron Sutton obviously would have to start, and Brian Allen after him, right? I mean, or William Gay,
Yeah, I would think Gay.
Let's not even go there.
yeah, you're right. We're just guessing. I mean, the reason Hayden got first team reps on Wednesday, I saw some beat writers report that, was because Sensabaugh didn't go. So, I don't think either guy's going to go, and so this is going to be. Look, if you're Tom Brady, you're licking your chops on the matchups. I mean, we'll get into who stands on top of whom on the Steelers side offensively with Ben. But on defensively, the Steelers don't rotate their guys. So Artie's going to be on a side clearly. And then you're going to have whether it's Sutton, whether it's Gay, whoever it is on the other side. And you're going to have to deal with Gronk, and you're going to have to deal with guys coming out of the backfield. It's going to be a big, big task. This is not the week that you wanted the Steelers to be down, two or three starters on the defense, and that's the situation they're looking at.
All right, let's roll through the inactives real quick then and try to figure this thing out. Obviously Joshua Dobbs is going to be down. We think McDonald and Sensabaugh are going to be down. That's two. You're pretty sure
Three. Yeah, that's three.
Yeah, I got to take my shoes off here. Matakavich, do we think he's going to be down?
Yes, yeah, he's down. That's four. Yep, he's definitely down.
Four. Okay, Matt Filer, he going to be down?
Well, I mean, I'll just say on my list, it's going to be Juju and Joe Hayden. So, then add a name after that. So, yeah, probably guess it's Filer. But I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, McCullers, Daniel McCullers is another option there. And, J.J. Wilcox could be an option there.
I'd be surprised if we've said, you just need defensive back bodies at that point. So I'd be surprised if Wilcox is not active.
Exactly. I mean, I think he's going to dress this week. I think he has to out of necessity because of the bodies being down. David, I'm going to guess that Juju and Joe Hayden both dress. I don't know how much they're going to play, but I'm going to guess that both of those.
I hope you're right. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Both those guys dress there. So Stephon Tuitt practiced fully on Thursday after missing Wednesday with an illness. And closing out the injury report, Martavis Bryant was back practicing, not injury related, as we talked about with him being in the hospital.
Boy, did he take some heat from local media.
Boy, you got to know. Yeah, sometimes it's better to wait, right?
I mean, good gracious. Point is he didn't skip practice. I mean, he had an excused absence. Now, I realize he's missed a bunch of practices this year, and when you see him not performing to the level that we expect, Mike Tomlin's you would think that Mike Tomlin, let me put it this way. Mike Tomlin is a bigger believer in practice than I would have imagined. And I'm not at all suggesting practice isn't important, but it is obviously tremendously important to Mike Tomlin and the Steeler coaching staff. And their success proves that their methods are good. So, I don't think anybody takes it casually that Martavis Bryant's missing practice, but the way the media was spouting it at Martavis was like, You know, he was sleeping in, smoking, almost, you know, sleeping in, smoking weed, you know, skipping practice, which is clearly not what happened. So let's be very clear on that point.
Yeah, and you know, we don't know what happened, you know, with his girlfriend. I mean, obviously something serious enough to put her in the hospital there. So, I mean, look, unfortunately, these kind of situations happen with their immediate family from time to time. And yeah, I realize he's missed some practices due to illness or whatnot. And I think, you know, you're not going to name any names, but I think a couple of radio guys you're kind of pointing your fingers at, right?
Yeah, a couple of people they were, you know, I think they were pretty harsh on Martavis.
All right. So one thing that we did learn from Martavis Bryant on Thursday is he will not be handling kickoffs. And I think we kind of talked with Ben Volen during our interview about that. So keep that in mind when you're listening to the interview that took place before Martavis talked to the media there. So, well, here's the thing. If Martavis is not going to return kickoffs and you think Juju's going to be down this week, who's going to return kickoffs? Fitz Tuzant?
Yeah, Fitz is going to be the guy. I mean, obviously we were hoping Juju would be the guy, and I think Juju probably, if he's healthy, he'll be the guy. But, you know, the other thing about the Juju thing that's a little disconcerting is part of the reason I think this is Juju's missed a game already with a hamstring injury. So, you know, when these things, I don't know 100% certain that it's the same hamstring that he injured before, but, you know, if it's a recurring injury, that's troublesome.
Right, boy, they need him offensively. They really do, because there could be a. I think there has a potential for him and Le'Veon Bell to have some nice matchups when they go empty in this game, which I think we're going to see, you know, quite a bit of empty formations in this game offensively for the Steelers here. So, you know, it's just a kind of a domino effect when you talk about Juju for sure. So keep your fingers crossed that, you know, he's able to get himself right very, very quickly here before Sunday, because I really think they're going to need him there. All right, that's the injury report there. You know, when you look at the New England side of things, I think really the main thing to look at there is Alan Branch. He is not practiced the Wednesday and Thursday for them at this point. And because they signed Ricky Jean-Francois back to the roster this week, I'm not expecting him to play. It looks like, though, we could see you know, Flowers make it back this week for them. Possibly Van Noy. Make it back for them as well, too. So, you know, it's next to impossible to read anything into a Patriots injury report, you know, every week. So I'm not even going to try to do that past of kind of speculating about Branch not playing.
All right. So let's why don't we talk a little bit about the X's and O's. And like I said, we get into this a fair bit with Ben on the Patriots. You know, offense. We really go into their Patriots offense pretty in depth. Dave, for the Steelers offensively to win this game, do they have to score 30 points?
That's kind of a loaded question there, I think. I think they do, David. I think they do have to score, you know, 29-30, right around in there, you know. Let's say 29 or more. Yes, they do.
Yeah. So, you know, how are you going to do it here? Because I'm with you. Look, if I'm Bill Belichick, there's no way Antonio Brown sees single man coverage at any point in this game. I'm playing some zone. I'm playing two high safeties. I'm going to have help over the top, and I'm going to roll my safety that direction so you can't take those sideline shots. I mentioned before, I think we'll see AB lined up on the left of the Steelers formation slightly more typical. He was lined up. I think they tried to get him on Carr. I think the Patriots will move their corners. They'll travel. So we're told to expect Butler possibly on AB, and they've had some success kind of containing AB in the past. So, you know, it is the secondary receivers who are going to have to be a big component of the game. And without Vance McDonald and potentially without Juju, my goodness, I mean, it just comes down to three guys, if that's the case. And that's, you know, Jesse James, who had a very productive game last week. Eli Rogers, who had maybe his most productive game of the season last week. And then Martavis, who, you know, did a little bit more. But these guys are going to have to be, you know, the big contributors for the Steelers to win this game.
You know, when you talk about this team offensively, you can't and with them possibly beating the Patriots this time around, you can't help but go back and look at the last time that they actually were able to beat the Patriots. And that was obviously in 2011, and I'm talking with Brady here. I think you have to possess the football in this game. And hey, look, I mean, let's go back even to last year in that game against the Patriots. During the regular season, there they did some of the right things early on in that game, Jarvis Jones, I think, even ripped the ball out of Amendola or Edelman. One early in that game, they got the turnover. But they couldn't capitalize on it, I don't think. Or didn't Landry Jones give it right back to him in a throw in the end zone right there? So, if you force the Patriots to turn the ball over in this game, you damn sure better take advantage of it. If you don't turn that into 7 points, you might as well not even count it as a turnover in that game, if you ask me. Now, if you go back again and I did this yesterday, watched a lot of the game, and look, I mean, this Patriots team is totally different from the one from 2011 there, but. You know, it all centers around Tom Brady, in my opinion. Their defense, the Patriots' defense, this year is, in my opinion, not as good of one that they've had in several years, and especially not as good, I don't think, as that one that they had in 2011. Now, what the Steelers did so right in that game offensively was they possessed the football, and Tom Brady can't beat you if he's not on the field a bunch, and if you're able to keep them out of the end zone. If you remember back, David, they had in addition to that cat, they have Rob Gronkowski. They had a guy named Aaron Hernandez on that team as well too. And boy, they what a 1-2 punch those guys were even back then. Now the Steelers' offense converted 10 of 16 third downs in that game, David. 10 of 16. 63% conversion rate in that game. On the flip side, while they did, I think Ben had one interception in that game. I think that was it as far as turnovers go. On the flip side, they were able to force the Patriots only converted 3 of 10 of their third downs, 30% in that game. Going back and watching that game, I didn't think he had an awful game. He completed 24, 35 passes in that game. The big thing was the Steelers, I think, if memory serves me, they tackled the catch extremely well in that game. Not a lot of yak. Brady ended up with 198 passing yards. He did throw 2 TDs in that game, one to Deion Branch and one to Aaron Hernandez. And they sacked him, I think, 3 times in that game as well, too. So, you know, they minimized a lot of I'm trying to look at big plays real quick here in that game. They only had 2 explosive plays in that game. A pass short right to Gronkowski that only went 19 yards. That was that turned into an explosive play because of Ryan Clark unnecessary roughness call. And then another pass short right to Gronkowski for 23 yards. So they had just 2 explosive plays in that game. Now, the Steelers only had 2 explosive plays in that game as well, too. But if memory serves me, they did a good job of tackling the catch in that game. And I'm trying to find a possession sheet here on this. Believe it or not, the Patriots had the ball 4 times in the first half. They punted their first 2 times, and the final 2 possessions that they had during the first half ended in points, a touchdown and a field goal. And in the second half, they actually still kind of moved the football a little bit. Out of their 5 second half possessions, they punted on the first one. They missed a field goal a field goal on their second possession. Then they punted. Then they had a late touchdown in that game. And then obviously they had that safety to close out the game there. So limit their possessions, and the Steelers have to maximize their possessions, and they're going to have to convert some serious third downs. And I think Le'Veon Bell, I want to see them be able to run the football early in this game. I think the whole offense should be centered around Le'Veon Bell in the first half of this game.
Yeah, we talk about, you know, what happened. You go back to the game where the Steelers, the 55-31 game in 2013. That's a game that knocked the Steelers to 2-6. Both quarterbacks threw for 400 yards, over 400, or four. Ben threw 400 exactly, and four touchdowns. Ben had two interceptions. It was a game where the Steelers came back in that third quarter and I think tied it at 24-24, or were down 27-24 at the end of the quarter, and gave up four fourth quarter touchdowns because they were giving up the big plays. And that's where time of possession obviously can be a little deceiving, is if you give up short possessions that are big play touchdowns, that's a problem. And, you know, you look at this game and that's it, Dave. I do think, you know, you talk about the importance of the run game and the, you know, run game. If you look at the NFL, and I know not everybody buys this philosophy, but really run game statistics, point to the fact that, you know, it's not all that significant. And what the run game does a lot of times is, you know, you control time of possession. So, you know, that's important, particularly late in games. It minimizes turnovers because you're less likely to lose the ball running it than passing it. And it gives your defense a break, not being on the field. So, you know, those are important things. And Dave's point about Brady not being on the field is significant. And again, I'm going to be fascinated to see what we get from Tom Brady, because what we saw the first, you know, 12, 13 games the Patriots played, and then what we saw Monday night was completely, you know, to first, you know, 12 games and then Monday night, you know, Brady looked awful in this game. And I, you know, the big question mark, and we'll get some of the answer, is how much of that was due to Rob Gronkowski not being available, because the Patriots didn't have the personnel to play two tight ends. We know how much they like to play that, you know, that kind of personnel grouping, or that as part of a personnel grouping. And I expect we'll see a ton of Dwayne Allen and Rob Gronkowski on the field at the same time, which is going to be another challenge for the Steelers in terms of, you know, you're going to play dime. You're going to walk Sean Davis down in the box. Is J.J. Wilcox going to be on the field? How are you going to play dime? And what personnel are you going to use if you play dime? Is William Gay going to be a prominent guy? Who are you going to put on top of Gronkowski? Are you going to put guys on top of, you know, Dwayne Allen? This would be a game where, again, if you're in the stadium, and hopefully most of you are in the stadium, or, you know, you have a chance to watch, you know, once we have a chance to watch the All-22, we'll see some things that differently. But it will be, I hope, when they give us the television view, watching on television, that they give us a big enough view that we can see how the Steelers line up defensively, and the Patriots as well, because I think it'll be really telling to watch, you know, how how both teams line up their you know, their linebackers and their secondary, and you know, how they spread things out and what they choose to do. That'll be a fascinating chess match in this one.
You know, not so much Dwayne Allen either, but you know, Burkhead back there, they can do some things sure. with him and
James White. James White's fantastic out of the backfield.
And you can use Burkhead, as a kind of a fullback, you know, two back sets sometimes too with him. So it will be interesting to see how many times they go with a more of a heavier personnel package in this game. I think I mentioned this quite a bit with Ben when we talked to him yesterday as well too, was the thing that the Patriots and they're notorious of being able to do this is they can kind of they have personnel groupings that they can use to their advantage offensively regardless of what you throw out there to combat it. So if I'm them, I want to see if I can get the Steelers' traditional base 3-4 unit on the field as much as possible. That means Hargrave. That means whoever they play alongside Vince Williams in there. Because I want to try to find myself a matchup that I can exploit. If I see them go heavy, the Steelers go kind of a heavy personnel grouping on the other side, well, that allows me to give more of a spread look, split Gronkowski out, or do something with split Deion Lewis out, and all. I can go empty and really zero in on a kind of a mismatch there. David, let me ask you this about Rob Gronkowski in that game in 2011 against the Patriots. He had 7 catches for 94 yards and no touchdowns, and he had a long of 23. If I guaranteed you could have those numbers right now, would you take them, or would you take your chances that you could that you could do better than those numbers?
Yeah, you had mentioned on Wednesday, you said 7 and 75 and a touchdown, and honestly, I think those were his numbers kind of last game. I don't view that as being a death knell for the Steelers. I think if he has 7 catches for 75 yards and a TD, look, the Patriots aren't going to get shut out. So if he ends up with 1 TD and 75 yards of offense, and you think the Patriots are going to need, 350 yards of offense, that's a ton of offense coming from other guys. So, I'd take 775 or 795 and a touchdown. Yeah, I would take it. That's fine. If I'm the Patriots and somebody said Antonio Brown will have those same numbers, I'd take those too. 7 for 85 and a touchdown, I would defensively, I would sign up as both the Patriots and the Steelers defensively to have those numbers for Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be interesting to see how they defend that. Now, you go back and you look at the film from the game against the Ravens and how the Steelers used their linebackers, and we tossed around some of those quotes that Mike Tomlin gave us on Tuesday. L.J. Fort didn't play but 9 snaps in that game, and, I think 3 of them came right at the end there. He was obviously on the field for the interception, was one of them. He saw Jeremy, I don't know if you remember the play, but he saw Jeremy Maclin in half on one of those plays, I think about midway through the game. Boy, he's your most athletic guy. Do you trust him against the run? Do you trust him, to be able to be more of a 3 down guy than you do a guy like Arthur Motes and Sean Spence? That's going to certainly be something to look for here. As is, I don't think you can go into this game and say, oh, they absolutely have to put Sean Davis on Rob Gronkowski. The personnel groupings and what you see across from you is obviously going to dictate how a lot of this goes. I think you're going to see Sean Davis on Gronkowski at times. Unfortunately, it might be an inside linebacker at a couple of times in this game on Rob Gronkowski, or it might be one of your nickel guys as well. You got to try to get your hands on Gronkowski as much as you can and disrupt whatever he tries to do. But as we've seen, and I think Greg Cosell did a great job earlier in the year talking about how the Patriots manufacture guys open with some of these bunch formations. Even if you're able to get hands on Rob Gronkowski a few times with a bigger body, they're just going to bunch him up into a grouping with another wide receiver there, and they're just going to rub you right off of them. So, Gronkowski's going to have his chances in this game. Obviously, he's going to get targeted 9-10 times, right?
And the thing is, and your point is very good, because with Cooks and Hogan, both of whom, Hogan's obviously, should rightly so scare Steeler fans because he torched them in the AFC playoff game. I mean, when you have Cooks, Hogan, Amendola, and Gronk, I mean, let's just say you've got 4 corners on the field, which I don't know that the Steelers are going to have that at any point in time, but you've got matchup issues right there. And that's without thinking about what Burkhead, Deion Lewis, and really James White, who you'll remember caught, I think, 13 passes in the Super Bowl, what those guys can do. Deion Lewis made the great one-handed catch. Was it Lewis or White in the game on Monday night?
Oh, Lewis. Yeah, that was on a nice boy, Tom Brady.
We all route out the right side.
Yeah, what a nice play.
Yeah, crazy throw by, you know, you almost looked like Brady was just making sure that it wouldn't be trouble. And Deion Lewis goes and makes the one-handed, right-handed catch. But, you know, what those guys can do out of the backfield. So, look, the matchups aren't good for the Steelers defensively. They're just not. They're not good for anybody defensively. This is why the Patriots had such a top, high-ranked offense. And you know, missing – we'll see what Gronk does. And give the Dolphins credit. Look, the Dolphins were a playoff team last year. They've had a brutal season, but they squashed the Broncos 2 weeks ago, and they came out and they played a really good game. They have some, you know, decent players defensively, and they were able to do what they needed to do. And we've talked about it a million times, and I'll just emphasize it one more time. If you can get pressure up the middle in Tom Brady's face, that will make all the difference in the world. If you can move him off the spot, and as with any quarterback, you get pressure up the middle. That'll be a key defensively for the Steelers winning this game.
You know, when you guys going back and watching that, man, I need more hours in a day, or I need a clone one, because I jump around so much in here. I get fascinated with this and spend way too much time on this. But I was watching a little bit of that, the all 22 of that 2011 game. Do you remember that Lawrence Timmons started that game at right outside linebacker in place of James Harrison was out injured that game? I'm trying to remember, was that the fractured orbital bone season that he got in that game against the Houston Texans, I think, from Dwayne Brown that caused James Harrison to miss like three or four games. I think that was the season there because Lawrence Timmons had to play the whole game at right outside linebacker.
Which is back in the day when he played a little bit outside. So, well, I mean, it was –
Well,
you know,
no, he really didn't play a lot. You know, outside of those four games were, David, that he filled in for James Harrison, his entire career was pretty much inside, and he was not good on. You know, people kept saying, "Well, why do we need to think about moving Lawrence Timmons to the outside kind of later on in his career?" And I said, "Hell no! Go back and watch the tape of those four games that he filled in for James Harrison. Lawrence Timmons was not an outside linebacker, plain and simple. And now would he be in maybe today's Steelers defense because of how much they like to drop these guys? Maybe, but." Back then, your outside linebackers, you know, I know it was only 6 years ago, but they, you know, those were guys, as Mike Tomlin said recently in an interview, those are guys were mostly used like you'd use defensive ends for the most part. Now, Woodley did drop a little bit, started to drop a little bit more in coverage around that time and all. And in fact, that game, I think, against the Patriots there in 2011 was the last good game of Woodley's career. Didn't he have two sacks in that game? And then didn't he also wasn't that the game that he injured the hamstring on, and it ended up being the beginning of the end with Lamar Woodley in that game? But my point is that you did not have James Harrison in that game. You did not have James Ferrier in that game. He was out injured. I think that was a groin, if I'm not mistaken, that game with him. So your inside linebackers that game were Stevenson Sylvester and Larry Foote. Your two backups started that game. Ziggy Hood on one side, Brett Kiso on the other side. And then obviously, you know, the secondary was William Gay, Ike Taylor, Ryan Clark, and Troy Polamalu there. I guess what I'm getting at here is, boy, that I don't remember what we kind of felt going into that game. But the Steelers' defense was really undermanned and had some guys out of place in that game, and they still managed to kind of pull off, I don't want to say the unthinkable, but you know, they were able to get the win there. And when you talk about what the Steelers do now, if you heard Tom Brady talk during his press conference on Thursday, you know, he was asked, well, what do you see out of them? He says, look, you know, in so many words, their defense hasn't changed much. You know, they still, and Bill Belichick said this a couple of days ago as well, too. They still play some man, and they have been playing some man this year. You know, people don't realize that when you play, you know, matchup zone at times, You know, it will look a lot like zone until an eligible declares, and then it becomes man in certain instances. Those are oftentimes hard to kind of pick out when you watch the all 22 there. So they are going to play man. They're not going to play man every snap in this game. But they are going to play some straight man. They're going to play some Ripley's and some matchup zone in this game as well too. And I thought Tom Brady kind of put it best during his press conference on Thursday. He says they're not going to completely retool their defense in week 15 of a regular season. He says they are going to do what they've been doing this year, and our job is to figure out what they're doing more of and beat it in so many words. So
when you're 11-2, you don't change what got you there, and neither team is going to do that in this game. I mean, you may see a trick play here or there, or you may see something that they've got up their sleeve, but they're going to play the style that got them there. Just the way it is, and it's going to be dictated by the personnel available. And obviously, if the Steelers, assuming Vance McDonald can't go. We'll see how much heavy personnel the Steelers play. Probably not a lot, just in a sub-package specific situations. We'll see who gets the snaps, whether it's Hawkins. We haven't talked – much to Chris Hubbard's credit, we have not mentioned Marcus Gilbert at all. Obviously, he's not going to be around. He'll be coming back soon. But Hubbard's been, more than sufficient on that right side. And again,
that guy's made some money this year, hadn't he?
yeah. He is a serviceable. He's shown he can be a serviceable guy in the NFL. And I don't think he's going to break the bank. But he should get a 3-year, $10 million contract probably from somebody, at least something along those lines. I don't know if somebody's going to sign him to be a starter, but he's secured his immediate future. In the league, so nice for him. And the point being that, look, the difference in this game might be pressure. And I think the Steelers have the better opportunity in terms of personnel who are capable of getting pressure on Brady versus the Patriots getting pressure on Roethlisberger. Having said that, I think one of the disappointments here in this stretch of Steeler wins has been the offensive line has not been dominant. And this is a game where they have a chance to be dominant. And for Dave, I agree with a lot of what you've said here about what it's going to take for the Steelers to win. And just kind of taking a different angle, I think the Steelers' offensive line, if they can keep Ben clean and can dominate so that the Steelers have a productive run game, that may be for the Steelers to win, mark that down as my key to the game.
Well, we've talked about the running game at times, and it's almost like everybody, we see the inside zone stuff. We see the double, what I like to call the double to the bubble. You have the double team, and then the guy releases off of that double to the second level there. But the way the running style that Le'Veon Bell has, man. I just would like to see a little bit more from the running game, and it seems like it's been weeks now that we've seen a strong emphasis put on getting linemen out in space. The pulling of your guards to either side, the pin and pull on the right side with DeCastro and Pouncey. Look, they have a very athletic linebacker in Landon Roberts, but I want to find out just how athletic he is. I want those guys to have to move sideline to sideline to make plays, because I think they can be run on, but I think you're playing right into their hands if you run that 14 straight all day. Okay. I think and the wraparound, handoffs and stuff like that. Yeah, 3-4 yards is fine, but I think you can do a little bit more damage with Le'Veon Bell outside of the guards, if you will. I think this is a team that you can run the counter on here. Now, it certainly is sad that we're not going to probably have Vance McDonald in this game, because it would be a perfect game to run some two tight end sets with him and Jesse James out of and all. But if Juju plays, I think you can still have some of that inside blocking with him. But Like I said, kind of started the show, David, I really think they're going to have to lean on Le'Veon Bell early. And that means, too, the passing game can be an extension of the running game. So it is okay to dump the football off to Le'Veon Bell on first and 10 and get 4 or 5 yards. That's okay to do. You cannot have first and 10 plays getting 1 yard or losing yardage. You can't get second and 8 plays getting 1 yard. You know, you've got to keep yourself in very, very manageable situations here in this game. Almost kind of, I think, going back to 2011 there. The fact that they converted over 60% of their third downs in that game was huge. And I do expect the Patriots to do their best to not let Antonio Brown kill them. I think Martavis Bryant is going to have some chances in this game to make plays. And if he doesn't, that might be the difference. And it'll also be interesting to see how Juju, assuming he's healthy enough to be able to play, can make a difference. You're right. This offensive line, if you go back, David, and look at all the meetings, all the previous meetings back to 2013, with the Patriots, when you look at the offensive line from left to right, this is the best they've had right here. And this is even without Marcus Gilbert in the lineup here. Because if you go back to even Le'Veon Bell's first game against the Patriots in his rookie season, Guy Whimper played in that game. Fernando Velasco played in that game. You know, we forget these things. But this is top to bottom offensively. And then, like we said, we recapped the offensive personnel that the Steelers had in the AFC Championship against the Patriots last year. I mean, you go back and look at that personnel and you kind of giggle. It's like, man, no wonder. You know, they couldn't do anything, especially after losing Le'Veon Bell early, and obviously didn't have Martavis Bryant for that game. This year's offensive unit is the best we've seen going up against the Patriots unit in eons.
All right, Dave. Well, let's get to our buddy Ben, because we have an extended conversation with Ben Valin of the Boston Globe, and that's coming up right now. Okay, welcome back. And as we talked about on Wednesday, because of some travel that our next guest was doing on Wednesday, coming back from Miami, we are getting into our breakdown of Steelers-Patriots with the beat writer today. And pleased to be joined again by the exceptional beat writer from the Boston Globe, Ben Valin, who he's been with us. I feel like he's a friend of the show now. He's been with us twice last year and in years past. And, of course, with the Patriots about to win, it looks like the AFC East and the Steelers winning the AFC North, they'll be playing again next year, if not again in the playoffs. Ben, as always, thanks for being with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, these two teams have played together so much the last years. I mean, I feel like I should get my name on the marquee of your podcast or something.
Absolutely. And you can follow Ben on Twitter at his name, at BenVolin. And always great stuff in the Globe, post-game, breaking things down, and obviously leading into the game this week. And, yeah, Ben, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, we talk about teams we know, and you covering the Patriots. Look, you've seen every team in the league, having worked and covered the Dolphins before that. You know teams well, but of course you know teams in the AFC East probably better than the other teams, just because you see them twice. And I feel like Steeler fans know the teams in the AFC North because they see them all the time. But honest to goodness, I feel like Steeler fans have a great sense and really a trepidation of New England and the Patriots from what they've done. Everybody was in front of their televisions Monday night watching this game against the Dolphins. I know you wrote about it and talked about what they were missing. Was this game a one-off, or should Patriots fans be concerned that could happen again?
They should be concerned, no question. It's another road game coming up, and especially with a short week here to prepare, coming off a Monday night game on the road. So the schedule makers did the Patriots no favors here. And, the offense, I think the Patriots offense will bounce back, because I do think not having Rob Gronkowski was such a huge loss for them. Not only the great player that he is, but just the attention that he draws and how he softens up the defense and the coverage for everyone else. The guys they had out there, even Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola, Chris Hogan, they really weren't able to create their own separation against the Dolphins. So having Gronkowski back is just a huge lift for the Patriots offense. But the defense, I'm definitely concerned about, because they have really been hit by injuries up front on the defensive line of late. We already know they lost Dante Hightower for the season, but last week they were playing without Kyle Van Noy and Trey Flowers, two of their two best edge defenders. And not surprisingly, the last couple weeks with these injuries, the Patriots had just been decimated on the edges, the Bills and the Dolphins just killing them on the outside, running for 300-plus yards. Patriots are also down Alan Branch, a very good defensive tackle. They're playing guys up front. A guy that plucked off the Bills practice squad 3 weeks ago, Eric Lee, he played all 73 snaps the other night, and they're down to like third and fourth stringers. So part of me wonders if the Patriots were holding some guys out against Miami to make sure that they're ready for this game, because obviously Le'Veon Bell is going to be a huge challenge for them. And the run defense has been awful, averaging 5 yards a carry over this recent stretch. And the Bills and the Dolphins ran roughshod over them. So they've got to get healthy up front. And if they don't, if they're playing these practice squad guys again, it could get ugly against the Steelers.
I joked that if the Patriots lost this game, the narrative would be that Belichick was holding things back. He didn't want to show his cards to the Steelers, and people kind of took that seriously. But let me ask you this. In watching the game on Monday night, it just struck me right from the get-go, from the first pass Brady threw out into the right flat where he kind of bounced it in there. Then on the third down play, it looked like he was a tad late and behind to Brandon Cooks, and he never got into a rhythm. I haven't seen, we go back to that Kansas City game years ago when people asked, is Tom Brady finally showing some signs of age or is he losing it? I'm not suggesting Brady's losing it. I think the question I have, is there something wrong with him? Because he's been so exceptionally good this year that things just look so out of sync on Monday night that it just begged the question.
Right. I think a lot of that was not having Gronkowski, his security blanket. And people like in New England like to say, well, they've won without Gronk before. And that's true. But they don't have Gronk or Julian Edelman right now. And those are two Tom Brady's two favorite targets, the most talented players on offense, and really the guys that draw the attention of the defense and can win one-on-one consistently. So they played two games this year without Gronk, and obviously Edelman's out for the season. And both those games, the Bucs and the Dolphins, were their two lowest scoring outputs, 19 and 20 points. And I think that's because of what I said before, that none of the other guys, even someone as Brandon Cooks, who's put up some good numbers this year, none of those guys are alpha players. They're not guys who can create separation on their own. And I think they were very limited with their personnel on the outside against the Dolphins, and the offensive line really struggled against the Dolphins' very talented front of Sue and Cam Wake and Andre Branch and some of those guys. So combined with Brady not having a ton of time in the pocket and not having Gronkowski there, he wasn't comfortable. He couldn't get into a rhythm. And we saw it against the Chiefs in week one this year. And then we saw it again on Monday night when the Patriots are just out of answers. Brady, all he can do is drop back and just chuck it deep and hope for a miracle to Cooks or Chris Hogan. And when they're doing that, you've won as a defense. You've really frustrated Brady because him and Josh McDaniels usually have an answer, but they did not against the Dolphins. And I think the Patriots believe that having Gronkowski back, and he'll be fresh and ready to go after taking last game off with the suspension, I think they think having him back will open up the offense, and suddenly it looks a lot better when you've got Gronkowski as your number one guy, and Deion Lewis and James White and Rex Burkhead have been phenomenal out of the backfield in the passing game, and then you add Hogan and Amendola and Cooks as your secondary pieces, then your offense is really operating more at full strength. And, we'll see how that works out against the Steelers on Sunday. But I think having Gronk back will be such a huge game changer for the Patriots.
I hate to, Ben, to turn this into the Rob Gronkowski podcast, but, if you go back a couple of weeks ago in the first meeting between the Patriots and the Dolphins, the Patriots really, they out-schemed the Dolphins, period, in that game with Rob Gronkowski on a couple of those switch routes. Brady McDaniel do an excellent job of finding one guy in the defense on the field at a certain time, isolating that guy, and then basically destroying them. And they did in that game a couple weeks ago. Now, obviously, they didn't have Gronkowski the other night. But as we've seen in the past, especially late last year, now, of course, they did have Julian Edelman, a fantastic route runner. But I am in awe in the past of even when they haven't had some of these weapons of how these guys are able to run the rub routes, the switch routes, without guys like Edelman, without guys like Gronkowski to get separation. But we just did not see that, and it's not, in my opinion, like the Dolphins did anything really peculiar. They played some man, they played some matchup zone, they just played it well. Was it just an execution and was issue on the Patriots end? And is Rob Gronkowski really that important that it made that big of a difference in the game?
Yeah, it really does, because we've seen it time and again where, you know, especially in the red zone, a team will devote three defenders to Gronk, you know, two linebackers and a safety, and that automatically opens up the field for everyone else. And when you take that threat out of the offense, you know, Brandon Cooks was wiped out by Xavien Howard the other night, the cornerback from the Dolphins, second-year guy, who's a talented young player, but he never had a game like that before. But you put a physical press corner against Brandon Cooks, and you don't have Gronkowski out there to draw some attention. I mean, he can really just take him away. And Brandon Cooks had one catch on eight passes thrown his way. What the Patriots do so well is, as you said, isolate the one-on-one matchups. And it's not even just targeting a specific guy. Their personnel is so varied that they can send two tight ends and a fullback onto the field, but then they'll go shotgun five wide out of it. And they'll put James Devlin, the fullback, out at the wide receiver position, and it helps Brady read the defense, because if a cornerback is out there covering James Devlin, not only does it take the cornerback out of the play, but it shows Brady that what type of coverage they're in, that they're probably in zone, and then he can get Danny Amendola lined up against a linebacker, and that's an easy win for Amendola at the line of scrimmage. Or they can get Gronkowski against a cornerback on the outside, or Rex Burkhead against someone on the outside. He's been a very nice revelation for the offense this year. So just having Gronk back, I think, just gives them so many other options, because without him, their tight ends were Dwayne Allen and a rookie, Jacob Hollister. Obviously, those guys are not Rob Gronkowski, and they don't even pretend to be. And just the effect that Gronk has on the rest of the offense and how the defense adjusts to him. Not to mention, I mean, he's had just so many big games against the Steelers. You know, the defining image of Gronkowski is galloping down the middle of the field, scampering for another long touchdown. Seems like he does that at least once a game against the Steelers. So and he's going to be refreshed and ready to go after sitting out last week. So it's a huge addition for the Patriots.
And David and I talked a little bit yesterday about what, you know, and I suppose this is the game plan that the Patriots are going to use once again, is to run a lot of heavy sets, especially with Ryan Shazier out for the Steelers now. They have some questions at inside linebacker. It would probably, you know, are you expecting them to run a lot of heavy sets in an attempt to have the Steelers have their base defense out on the field? That way, you know, they can either collapse Gronkowski on the end of the line of scrimmage, or they can spread him out based on what they see. Do you expect that to be the game plan in attacking this defense?
Yeah, that's a good point. For all this talk about Gronk, it's really the Patriots running backs that have been the focal point of this offense. Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, and James White, kind of the three-headed monster there. Against the Dolphins, again, this was without Gronk, so Brady relied on his running backs even more heavily. But against the Dolphins in the second quarter, the running backs accounted for all 16 touches in the offense. They gained every single yard in that one quarter. Brady hadn't even completed a pass to a wide receiver at halftime. So Deion Lewis has done a great job, I believe, former University of Pittsburgh product there.
Yeah.
For a 5'9", 195-pound guy, he runs with surprising power and really has done a phenomenal job of gaining something out of nothing this year or tacking on extra yards. He's dynamic in the passing game. He had an unbelievable one-handed catch against the Dolphins. Great quickness and moves and making guys miss. So he's been the first down running back and kind of the primary guy. But James White is great in the passing game, and Rex Burkhead is kind of the short yardage guy and the slot receiver. Like, all these guys are real versatile. And with the Steelers hurting at inside linebacker, obviously, That's definitely the matchup that the Patriots will be taking advantage of, just getting these running backs involved in the offense as much as they can. You know, some of it will be running between the tackles, but then some of it will be short passes and screen game as well. I definitely expect the Patriots to attack the Steelers linebackers, and their running backs have been the three most consistent performers on offense the last, you know, 5-6 weeks of the season. And there's no reason that won't continue against the Steelers.
Yeah, it's an impressive group. I love the Burkhead signing in the offseason and the article you wrote a few weeks ago about how he contributed so greatly on special teams. And we've seen him getting, you know, as you say, doing goal line short yardage work as well as catching the ball. Isn't the Patriots record with Deion Lewis in the lineup something extraordinary? Like, I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, for a while they were undefeated. They won their first like 16 or 17 games with him. Now they've lost this year. They've lost.
Right, they lost.
So finally, the streak is over. But yeah, Deion Lewis, what a find by them. They got him off the scrap heap in 2015, and he's just been nothing but phenomenal for them. Going to be a free agent after this year, and it might be tough for him to get a big contract, but he'll get rewarded. And if the Patriots are smart, they'll keep him in the fold because he's been terrific for them this year.
Yeah, they keep finding guys to put in that mix. When, you know, I was interested to hear you say that without Gronk there, the receivers, Cooks and Hogan, weren't necessarily guys who could get separation. And, you know, we know Hogan's story in the championship game, watching him stand with nobody within 10 yards of him and on one of those touchdowns in the back corner of the end zone. He obviously had a huge day that day against the Steelers. You know, they're both out there most of the time. Obviously, Cooks is seen as being a number one, and they gave up a lot to get him. How would you describe the skill sets of those two guys? Because, you know, I think of Hogan as a speed guy and Cooks as a, you know, maybe not one of the top five receivers in the league, but I do think of him as the back end of number ones. What have you seen this year, and where are those two guys?
So I'll start with Cooks because, you know, he's the new guy, and it's been interesting watching him this year. At times, he's been phenomenal, and he's a great deep ball receiver. He can split a double team. He can get out there. He can haul it in, track the ball. Very good hand-eye coordination. And the Patriots haven't had a consistent deep threat like him probably since Randy Moss. Of course, Cooks is a lot smaller than Moss. Different type of player in that sense. But he's been a great deep threat. But a press corner can totally shut him down. He is not much strength and does not fight for the ball. Week two, Marshawn Lattimore, the first round pick cornerback for the Saints out of Ohio State, another game where he just completely dominated and wiped out Brandon Cooks. Cooks, you know, he ends the game with great numbers. It'll say 5 for 92 and a touchdown, but he's not like the volume receiver that Edelman and even Amendola and Hogan are. He's not going to catch 8 balls for 112. He goes long stretches of the game where he's kind of quiet and, you know, great yards per catch average, but he's not Brady's security blanket. He's not the third down weapon. I think he's only caught 5 of 18 passes on third down this year. And he can be dominated physically. There's no question. He doesn't catch a short pass and break a tackle and take it 25 yards. Like, he's pretty strictly a deep threat and a square in kind of guy. So a great number two or three option, but when he had to be number one last week, Xavien Howard, a physical press corner, was completely able to wipe him out of the game. And Chris Hogan, that was his first game back from a 4-game absence from a shoulder injury. So I don't know how much of that was just him getting used to the speed of the game again, but he had just one catch for 1 yard. And another guy, he's great as your number three or four. But when he has to jump up the priority list there and he was number two the other night, you know, it does. He's fast, but he doesn't have the quickness of Edelman or Amendola. He's not a short distance kind of quickness guy. He's more of a long strider, I guess you would say. A bigger body too. He's 6'1", 6'2", about 200 pounds, whereas those other guys are under 6 feet tall. So Hogan, he's played in the slot. He's played outside. He's was having a real nice season before he suffered his shoulder injury. But again, he's your number three or your number four option. And he's great when Gronk is back in there. And of course, if they had Edelman, Hogan would be even better. But a lot of his big scores come when the other team just kind of forgets about him and forgets to cover him. And we saw that in the Steelers game last year.
Let me just follow that up with the Kenny Britt signing. And I mean, it's obviously easy to draw the parallel to them signing Malcolm Floyd at the end of last season, bringing him in, looking for another guy. Is there, Dave speculated that, you know, Philip Dorsett could actually be waived. I think you pointed out that he was the only non-quarterback to not play in the game against the Dolphins. Dorsett hasn't obviously been what they hoped in when they gave up Jacoby Brissett. Is that a possibility? And do you expect Britt to actually even have an opportunity to see the field this week?
They're throwing a lot at Kenny Britt to see how much he can pick up and whether he can even play 15, 20 snaps. I know Brady was supposed to spend a lot of time after practice with him on Wednesday to work with him and get him up to speed. He's a veteran guy, been around the league, played with several different quarterbacks. He's 6'3". I know obviously it didn't work out well with Britt in Cleveland this year, but he had 1,000 yards last year, and 6'3" veteran receivers with 1,000 yards in their recent resume, they don't get past, especially guys who went to Rutgers, they don't get past Bill Belichick. So I was not surprised to see them sign him. And yeah, Dorsett's been disappointing, no question. He had like a groin injury, I believe, early in the season, and that kind of hindered his development. And he'd still been playing snaps in recent weeks, but Brady just doesn't look his way. I just don't think has the confidence and trust in him right now. So yeah, him playing zero snaps was not a good sign. But they didn't waive him. They waived another player, Bernard Reedy, a speedy right. little punt returner. He was waived. So Dorsett is still around, and he's kind of like insurance for Brandon Cooks. To me, those guys are similar players, real fast guys, but don't have the well-rounded repertoire in their game, so to speak. I wouldn't be surprised to see Britt out there. I mean, the Patriots, they did that with Martellus Bennett earlier this year, and he went out and played right away. And they don't need Kenny Britt to play 70 snaps, but maybe just 15 or 20 in the red zone, give them a big body, because other than Gronkowski, it's all little guys. Amendola and, you know, Chris Hogan has some size, but they needed more height, and Kenny Britt will certainly help in that area.
When you look at the Patriots Wednesday injury report, which really is an exercise that nobody should do, 56 of the 53 players on the roster, I think, were on that. but all joking aside, I think Alan Branch probably going to be the most questionable of the group. And that would, it sounds like with Ricky Jean Francois being re-signed, it seems like there's a possibility Branch could miss a game. How big would that be? And I think the other guy maybe to keep an eye on this week would probably be Flowers, just because of the time that he's missed there. So can you quickly touch on the key things to look at on the injury report this week?
Sure, yeah. Branch, I have my doubts that he'll play. As you said, they signed Ricky Jean Francois this week, so Alan Branch is, you know, about a 20 to 25 snap guy. He had a great season last year, has been a little more average this year, more of a rotational guy. He's fallen behind Lawrence Guy and Malcolm Brown in the middle. Those two guys have been excellent. Lawrence Guy especially has been a really solid run defender this year. So Branch being out will hurt the run game, but it's not a devastating loss. Yeah, the two guys to watch are Trey Flowers and Kyle Van Noy, who is a real versatile defender. He started the year as their middle linebacker and their signal caller. Then when Dante Hightower went out, they moved Van Noy over to like the defensive end outside linebacker position. And without him and Flowers, they're two edge guys, the run defense really struggled against the Bills and the Dolphins. So they got to get those guys back. And those are the guys I'm wondering if maybe they could have played against the Dolphins on Monday, but really Belichick just wanted to make sure they were healthy for this big game against the Steelers. And so he held them out as a precaution. Those are the ones to watch. You know, Malcolm Butler, Stephon Gilmore, those guys have popped up on the injury report, but the secondary is fairly healthy. But without Branch, and then Trey Flowers has missed a couple games now, and Kyle Van Noy has been hobbled as well. They have to get those guys back against the Steelers.
When you go back and you look at the rosters from the AFC Championship game last year, obviously turnover on both sides. The Steelers, this will be the first game that Martavis Bryant has ever faced the Patriots. And then I think I was doing some research yesterday, going back to 2013, Le'Veon Bell's first season in the league. In the games that the Steelers have played the Patriots, they've only had you know, their main core, and that includes Bell, Brown, Roethlisberger, and you know their core offensive lineman Pouncey and DeCastro on the field for 11 snaps in total against the Patriots, and all 11 of those obviously came in the AFC Championship game. Now, knowing that that Bill Belichick is so great at taking away one specific thing, is it going to be Antonio Brown that they're going to focus on the most this week and make a guy like Le'Veon Bell beat him on the ground and out of the backfield? And is this the best Steelers team, maybe in several years that Bill Belichick has had to coach against?
Yeah, I'd say certainly this is the toughest challenge in the recent history of the Steelers-Patriots rivalry. You know, Patriots fans, I don't think they take the Steelers too seriously because we've seen it, blowouts, and they've won four in a row and they put up big points and big yards. But as you mentioned, this is the first time they face Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown. And this game's in Pittsburgh. Three of those four games were in New England, and last year's game in Pittsburgh had Landry Jones as quarterback. So I think being on the road and having a healthy offense is going to be a very tough challenge. Especially when you factor in that the Patriots are banged up right now. So you have to start with Antonio Brown. He can score from anywhere on the field. You're going to see a lot of cover two from the Patriots. They have two very good safeties in Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon. They have Patrick Chung is also a great safety, and he'll be on the field as well, but he's not like the deep center fielder. But they have two very good center fielders, and you have to take away the deep ball. Antonio Brown will be bracketed all game long because the last thing you want is him just ripping off a 60-yard chunk and going for a score. But Le'Veon Bell, at the same time, has to be a big focal point. And it's not only as a runner, but you guys saw it last week too. He can line up out wide, and he's a pretty good wide receiver too. The Dolphins exposed the Patriots linebackers badly. Kenyon Drake, not only running the ball, but they had him lined up out wide against Landon Roberts, and he burned him for a 47-yard fade route down the sideline. And I can just see Le'Veon Bell doing that all game against the Patriots linebackers as well. So it's going to be like a big game for their big nickel package. They've got to have the necessary corners and safeties in there to take away the deep pass. But then it's going to be up to guys like Lawrence Guy and Malcolm Brown and Trey Flowers if he plays. The guys up front have to get off their blocks, win that one-on-one, and keep Bell contained. And you're okay if Le'Veon Bell gets his yards and his touches, just as long as it's 4 or 5 yards a clip and he's not breaking off the big chunk plays. The Steelers are going to score on offense, but the Patriots, they have to make them earn it, and they can't just give up those big 40, 50-yard plays, which the Steelers are capable of at any time.
Will they put Chong on Juju in the slot? Is that what you're expecting?
See, I think Chong might be used on Le'Veon Bell because Le'Veon Bell is such a bad mismatch for the Patriots linebackers right now. So I could see Chong, who's a real versatile weapon and solid in one-on-one coverage. For up to me, I would use him and maybe backup safety Jordan Richards, another guy. I would use those guys on Le'Veon Bell. Smith-Schuster, more of a bigger physical corner. Maybe Stephon Gilmore draws him because that's kind of Stephon Gilmore's game. Antonio Brown has been Malcolm Butler the last few years, and I would probably keep that one as well because I don't know if Gilmore necessarily has the speed and the quickness to keep up with Antonio Brown. So it'll be interesting to see how the Patriots match up, but Malcolm Butler has done a fairly good job against Antonio Brown, just kind of chasing him all around the field. I think we might see that one again.
Well, if they go that route, then if they go 11 personnel, and then also if their three wide receivers are Brown, Juju, and Martavis Bryant, which we're going to see a lot of that in this game, and if you have Chung on, a guy like Bell, who would you put on the outside then if you're going to move Gilmore inside on a guy like Juju? Who would draw Martavis Bryant on the outside?
It would be either Jonathan Jones, who's been the number three guy, or maybe Eric Rowe, a guy they got from the Eagles last year. He's another big cornerback, has some good size to him. The Patriots do have a pretty good secondary. That's their strength for sure. Gilmore gives them an element that they haven't had in the past of the big physical kind of press man corner. But he, you know, he's a 6'1 guy and long and lanky. I don't know if that's the best matchup for an Antonio Brown. But they have two bigger guys in Gilmore and Eric Rowe, and then two smaller scrappy guys in Butler and Jonathan Jones. So, you know, look at the Steelers' attributes, and I think you can kind of see who's going to match up with who.
Ben, you've been incredibly generous with your time. We know the Patriots special teams are fantastic. Just one special teams question for you. There's always the debate with the new kickoff rules, whether it makes sense. And we've seen the Patriots really be one of the few teams to do this, to try and kick high and to the goal line rather than necessarily kick it out of the end zone. Is that a tactic? It looked like they were doing some of that on Monday night. Is that something we should expect to see on Sunday?
No question. They've done that all year. I haven't looked at the stats from this week, but as of a couple weeks ago, Steven Gostkowski, I think, had the second lowest touchback percentage in the NFL. And that's not because he can't reach the end zone. He's purposely kicking it high and short and also to the corner, trying to pin teams in one corner. And he's been excellent at it. His placement has been phenomenal. And the Patriots have had great kickoff coverage. Every time you stop a team short of the 25, it's a win. And the Patriots, again, I haven't looked at the most recent stats, but they've been top two or three all year in opponents' starting field position. So they make you earn your yards, and they're not just going to boot it out of the end zone and let the Steelers have it at the 25. They're going to try to pin them in the corner and make a play. And there's a huge difference when you start at the 17 instead of the 25. It makes it that much harder to score a touchdown. And, it's one of the tactics that the Patriots have been using all season.
And, you know, with the different – I mean, the Steelers have struggled so much in the kick return game for the last 5 years. I mean, it has been a disaster. And they had four straight possessions against this past week in their game against the Ravens, where they started the 20 or inside on returns by Martavis Bryant. So it'll be interesting to see if Juju or Fitz Toussaint are the guys back there. Okay, well, let's put you on the spot. I mean, this is an incredibly important game for both teams. They're both going to be in the playoffs, but for the Steelers, a win would, you know, do some, I think psychologically would be huge for their fans and obviously for the team as well, and put them in a position to clinch home field throughout. But, you know, Steeler fans are terrified of this game, rightly so. The same reason Patriots fans are so confident is we've not seen Brady have any trouble with this defense. Are the Patriots going to come in here and whoop their ass again?
I don't know if they're going to whoop their ass, but, you know, the Steelers defense is kind of heading in the wrong direction heading in this game. Obviously, the loss of Ryan Shazier, you hate to put it in these football terms because it's so serious and it goes so far beyond football, but obviously losing him has been tough for that defense, and they still have kind of a young secondary. I know they have some talented guys, Artie Burns, Sean Jones back there, but, you know, the Patriots haven't had too much problem with the players or with the scheme. And I'll be interested to see what Mike Tomlin does on defense.
Yep.
Can he come up with something to slow down Brady? Because he's just kind of run roughshod over the Steelers defense the last few years. But they have been struggling a little bit. And the Patriots are not quite headed in the right direction either. So it'll be, you know, which team can come up, with a better game plan and who can come up big in a big nationally televised game that obviously the whole country is going to be watching. But I think Ben and the Steelers offense have enough to keep it close, but it's going to be a big challenge for the Steelers defense. And they, in recent history, have not risen to the challenge against the Patriots.
You want to put a score on it for our listeners?
Yeah, I guess you're going to put me on the spot here.
Yes, we are.
First one to 40.
Yeah, it might be. It might be, to be honest. I'm going to go with the Patriots here. I think they win 30-27, we'll call it. It'll be close, but I still, especially coming off a loss, I think they're going to have everyone's attention, and I'm still going with the Patriots here.
Hey, Ben, we love having you on, and you know what? I hope we get to do it again this year. It'd be great if these two teams met in the AFC Championship game. Dave and I both are big fans of your work, read it every week, the recaps and the work you do. So thanks so much for making time for us, and enjoy the game. And like I say, hopefully we get a chance to cross paths. We will next year, but hopefully we get to do it in January.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Dave, excellent stuff from Ben. And as I mentioned, we recorded that yesterday. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the injury report this afternoon. We didn't have news on, Juju and Pouncey. And we'll see what happens with the Patriots injury report. But, you know, great insights on where they are. And look, remember, as we talk about Steelers injuries, the Patriots have been dealing with a ton of injury issues. They had their you know, big loss of Julian Edelman preseason. A guy, can you imagine, as we mentioned in that conversation, throwing him into that offense, what another addition he would be. So we'll see what Kenny Britt, you know, what kind of playing time he gets. So this is going to be a fun one. So let's get to our picks for the week, and we'll wrap things up. We both, I don't know that it's been many times this year, but we both got a Thursday night game right. And I got to say, I didn't even watch the second half. So I guess under the leadership of Brock Osweiler, the Broncos came back and got a win.
Yeah, thank God. That wasn't looking good. I mean, you had Trevor Siemian throw a quick interception last night, and then Siemian leaves the game early with an injury there, and you're thinking, oh, Lord, I got money riding on Brock here. But he ended up pulling up. Boy, the Colts had quite a few injuries in that game, too, and I think the difference in that game was the ability of Denver to run that football effectively throughout the game. Really took a lot of pressure off Brock Osweiler. Even Emmanuel Sanders left that game with an ankle or foot injury.
He got dinged up a couple times in that one. Yeah, Manny. Okay, so we get it right. You get a little extra football with bowl games coming up starting Saturday. The NFL now gets to take over the Saturday calendar. What you see now with injuries, one of the interesting things is teams where a guy has a four-week injury now, particularly teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, those guys go on IR, man. They're done. So you clean up your roster. You bring guys up from the practice squad. We saw the first kind of raids that we've seen this season as John Dorsey, the new GM of the Browns, picked up three guys off practice squad players of other teams. So they get a look at those guys. So let's get a roll on here. Detroit still, you know, on the outside, the fringes of this thing. The Bears get an impressive win last week against Cincinnati. I have to say that surprised me. I know the Bengals were beat up, didn't have perfect, and some other guys coming off that Steeler game, but I thought they would play better than they did, and this really smells like the end for Marvin Lewis on that side. But, Dave, I'll take the Lions -5 at home in this one. It still matters. I expect them to play well at home.
Yeah, look, I'm a Matthew Stafford fan. I think I've said that a few times this year. They're at home. They gotta have this game. So I'll take the Lions late at 5 as well.
Another kind of certainly probably behind the Steeler game, the most interesting game or one of the most interesting games of the weekend, Saturday night, 8:25 kickoff. Get in front of your TV for this one. The Chargers. You've heard us kind of say, at least me, gush about the Chargers, and I was with a buddy yesterday. What they have on offense with Rivers and then Keenan Allen. You've got Hunter, the tight end at Ole Miss. They've got Melvin Gordon. I mean, this is an on-fire Chargers team. And I just think the Chiefs have actually turned it around. And they have bad losses to the Jets and the Giants. I expect this to be a really good game. And against all my better judgment, I am going to pick the Chiefs because they're at home. But I'll kind of be rooting for the Chargers, I got to tell you.
Joey Bosa in that defense and Casey Hayward in that secondary. I don't think they're getting enough run. Phillip Rivers, he knows how to win these games. That's a tough place to play in Kansas City. I'm going to go as far as two as we're going to see that rookie quarterback for Kansas City in this game, David. Chargers
really?
Win. Yeah, Chargers win, and they win big in this one.
I hope you're right. So anyway, the line, if you're checking the Lions were 5-point favorite. The Chiefs, they're pick'em. Of course, we're both drawing a blank on the 10th overall pick, the kid from Texas. Help me out here.
Who are you talking about? The
backup quarterback that they took 10th overall. I'm drawing a huge blank. I got to look it up. Jeez. Come on, have one of our listeners scream it through the screen.
You're talking about the rookie.
Pat Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes. I thought you were talking about a Chargers guy for a moment. Okay, go ahead. Patrick Mahomes, right. Yeah. And I expect, look, there's been a lot of people clamoring. Now, make no mistake, the Alex Smith that we saw last couple weeks was kind of the Alex Smith that we saw early
beginning
on
in the season. Yeah, he's played fine.
In the beginning, I just think something happens in here.
for whatever reason, that we see Patrick McCombs.
All right. I don't know why Eli Manning's still playing quarterback, but he is. Eagles minus 7.5. Nick Foles, that's a 1 o'clock Sunday game in New York. I'll take the Eagles. I think the Eagles are still a good team.
Boy, we'll find out the difference between – look, the Giants' defense isn't great. They're down some people in this game, obviously, as well, too, especially at the wide receiver. I think the Eagles' defense is the – is the biggest factor here. So I think this might be close for most of the game, but I think the Eagles kind of pull ahead and cover that. What are you showing? Seven and a half?
7.5.
Yeah. This one might end up right at the touchdown mark, Dave, but I'll go ahead and go with you and say Eagles cover.
Aaron Rodgers back with the Packers, getting 2.5 in Carolina. Look out for Carolina. Give me the Panthers minus 2.5 at home.
Boy, I'm not going to bet against Aaron Rodgers. I know first game back, but boy, this will be like Jordy Nelson's first game back too, right? I had Jordy Nelson in one of my main fantasy leagues this year, and boy, as soon as Aaron Rodgers went to the side, that was it for Jordy Nelson there. And Aaron, I trust. Give me Green Bay to win this outright and cover.
Okay, Minnesota minus 10.5 against Cincinnati. Mike Zimmer, definitely coach of the year candidate. They're doing everything right, and it felt like the Bengals might have rolled over. And as I said, we're close to the end here with Marvin Lewis. I got to think he's not going to survive this season. Give me the Vikings rolling big.
Yeah, and boy, Joe Mixon's still struggling, I think, with a concussion from that hit that he got from Vince Williams a few weeks ago. I tell you, a guy that's making money right now, Giovanni Bernard. Boy, I think he's going to end up on the market, David. I think Bernard's going to end up in the market. And if God forbid, if the Steelers decide to go a different direction than Le'Veon Bell, boy, Bernard sure would look great as a number two punch alongside James Conner, right?
I'm a huge fan. So,
I've been saying for this season, I've been hinting that, man, maybe this is Marvin's last year in Cincinnati. I think it might be. Give me Minnesota to roll him up. At home, cover.
Buffalo minus 3 at home. Tyrod Taylor is going to be quarterback. Buffalo, this is a big game. The Dolphins, technically, I don't think are out of it. It matters for them. They're playing better. This should be – look, I know it's not going to captivate people here to get in front of the TV at 1 o'clock on Sunday, but I'm curious to see how this goes. I'll take the Bills at home minus the field goal, but I don't have any strong feeling about this game.
Yeah, I think Miami shot their shot – this past Monday here, and I don't know what the weather's going to be up like in Buffalo this time around, but that might play into this well too. I'm not touching this game though. Buffalo lay the points.
Jags minus 11.5 against the Texans. It's just too many. It's too many. I like the Jags a lot, but these divisional games have tended to be closer than that. And Bortles has played the best football of his career. He's getting a little bit of credit, and he deserves some of it. He's playing better, and this is a dangerous team, but I'm not going to touch this one either. But give me the Texans plus 11.5.
Isn't their secondary, the Jaguars secondary, closing in on like 20 interceptions or something crazy like that? I mean,
I had guys telling me through week 4, 5, 6 when the Jags beat the Steelers that the Jags were a joke, their defense was way overrated. Yeah, I don't hear much from those guys anymore.
Yeah, holy moly. I mean, it just seems like every week it's one or two interceptions from the secondary. I think that's, once again, the difference in this game. They're playing at home. They got a lot to play for right now. That's for damn sure. Give me Jacksonville to cover. Cover, what'd you say, 11?
11.5.
All right, yeah, that's a big number, but I'll go with it.
Oh, this is a big number. The Saints minus 16 against the Jets and Bryce Petty. Tells you a lot about Christian Hackenberg, the 51st pick last year, second-round pick. Now, Petty was a third-round pick the year before. Josh McCown, broken left hand on the IR, so done for the season. I imagine we'll see both these quarterbacks over the next couple weeks. I mean, Petty's not very good, clearly. The Jets aren't terrible. They keep surprising people by how competitive they've been. This will be the real challenge, though, without a quarterback. I mean, did the Saints roll them up with Kamara back? I guess they do. I guess it's a very possible a 30-3 type game. So I guess I'm going to lay 16, but no conviction. Some conviction.
I don't have the conviction here. They're playing at home, and I mean, it's a big, big game. I mean, New Orleans needs this one. For sure. And as you said, Petty's not McCown. And you know, that's going to be a huge difference in this game. And get Kamara back and yada yada. Saints roll.
Browns getting 7 at home against the Ravens. Okay, you called for it a couple weeks ago against the Bengals. I'm going to call for it right here. The win number one for the Browns. They played, you know, they should have won the game last week against the Packers. They gave up a long punt return, which was a disaster. They're getting a couple guys back. I think a couple guys back healthy. They've been a little more competitive. If Kaiser doesn't lose it for them, I'm going to call for the upset here. And the Browns will love this because obviously this will end the Ravens, you know, not necessarily fully end, but really put a huge crimp in the Ravens' playoff hopes. So give me the Browns in an outright win.
What are you showing, 7?
Yep.
Yeah, no chance. Ravens roll them.
All right, the good 4 o'clock game, Rams-Seahawks. This should be a fun one. We probably won't get to see any of this except maybe the kickoff. Rams getting 2.5 in Seattle. I was tweeting yesterday about the MVP award. Look, if, you know, AB needs the huge game. The Steelers need to win. Brady needs to not play well, and the Seahawks need to lose. I think the Seahawks will lose. Give me the Rams. Rooting hard for the Rams. Plus 2.5.
I think Todd Gurley's a difference in this thing too. So I'm with you. Give me the Rams.
Niners -1.5 against the Titans. Jimmy Garoppolo 2-0 as a starter. I think that's right. I think he's 2-0 as a starter. Give me the Niners at home over the Titans.
Yuck.
These are games they don't want to win. They should know that.
Boy, Tennessee's really kind of fading here. I think Marcus.
Big game for them.
Mariota, they gotta have it. I'll take Tennessee on the road, winning this one outright. I don't know why.
Get a chance to watch some night games this weekend. The Raiders hosting the Cowboys. The Cowboys -3. I think the Raiders are done. Give me the Cowboys -3.
I think Oakland has something for them. They get Dallas coming to their place on the road and all. I think this is kind of a bounce back game for them. Give me Oakland to win this straight up and cover.
Falcons -6 at Tampa. Give me Atlanta on Monday night.
Yeah, -6. I don't think they'll have an issue with that. I'm with you. Give me Atlanta on this one. And did you miss Arizona and Washington? Did you skip over
that? I did. So Arizona +4 on the road at Washington. Give me Washington.
I think Bruce Arians surprised some people. Look, they don't have they either did or going to put Adrian Peterson on IR. Yeah, these type of games, when you think Arizona just out of it, they surprise you. Give me Arizona to at least cover this. Maybe it's not an outright win, but I think you're showing 4 on this, right?
I'm 4, yes.
Yeah, I think it's at least a field goal game. So give me Arizona plus the points.
Okay, I've picked against the Steelers twice, and they've won both times. I told you what I think they need to do to win, but I don't think it'll be enough because I don't think the Steelers are going to be able to do enough defensively to keep the Patriots from putting up a ton of points in this one. I'm color me concerned, Dave. I think the offense plays well, but I think the loss of Juju is going to matter more than suspended. So if he's playing, that'll be great news. We'll find out, I think, in a couple hours here. But I've got the Patriots in this one, Dave, 38-34.
Man, I've gone from both extremes on this. If we would have done this show 2 weeks ago, David, I most definitely would have picked New England for sure. You know, and the game against Miami should not taint any of my thinking here. The Steelers, the more I get into this and the more I look at how the Steelers have played the Patriots in the past, not that that should matter now because the lineups have changed, but how they were able to compete with them for the most part with some of the rosters that they've had gives me some hope. Man, I mean, you got Hayward for this game. You go down the list at some of the guys. You know, Mike Hilton they didn't have last year. You know, overall, I think this is a better team
top to bottom. You know, obviously on the offensive side of the ball, too. There's no reason to think that the Steelers' offense won't be able to score in this game. Then it comes down to can the defense. So you know, up until yesterday, I was like, okay, I think the Steelers have a chance. A good chance to win this. When I get with David, I'm going to predict the Steelers win here. Well, it goes back to the whole 30-point thing earlier in the season. I said I can't pick the Steelers until they score 30 points until they score 30 points. I can't pick the Steelers to beat the Patriots, David, until they beat the Patriots. I'm sorry, I just can't. I think I would be a homer if I pick the Steelers in this game right now, especially without Ryan Shazier. I think they're going to have a shot. I think it's going to be a very, very close game. I'm going to give this one to the Patriots, 28-27. And you can send your hate mail to us at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com for us not being good Steelers fans. And because both of us picked against
28-27, last year's score, right? 28-27, Pats, so a repeat.
Yeah, I think they get to 28 the hard way here, the Patriots as well here. I think they win this on a late field goal, David. I do. And obviously, David and I hope we're both wrong as wrong can be on this. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Send us your hate mail, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Also, send us some donations. You can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button up right navigational bar. And that's it. Until Monday, David.
Enjoy the games. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the party, the holiday party scene. Be safe. And, we'll see what happens. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.